Okay, let's unpack this. Imagine your life takes a turn because of something meant to help you. A blood transfusion back in 1986, only to find out years later it transmitted HIV.
Wow.
That's the reality Francine Damiano faced. But here's where it gets really interesting. When she sought legal recourse, the court said, essentially, too late. In this deep dive, we're tackling the complexities of Florida's medical malpractice statute of repose through the very human story of Damiano v. McDaniel. We've got the case brief, a standard legal brief, even some internal guidance on how to discuss this, all to get a handle on how these seemingly abstract legal deadlines can have such concrete and, well, profound effects on individuals dealing with injuries that don't surface immediately.
What's fascinating here is the immediate clash between, our intuitive sense of justice. If you're harmed by negligence, you should have a way to seek redress, and this seemingly immovable wall of legal time limits. This case throws that tension into sharp relief, and it prompts us to ask, how does a legal system balance the need to compensate those who are harmed with the practicalities of managing potential liability over time for healthcare
All
providers?
right, so let's paint the picture. Francine Damiano received that blood transfusion in June 1986.
Okay.
It wasn't until April 1990 that she received the devastating news she was HIV positive.
4 years later.
Tragically, by then, she had unknowingly transmitted the virus to her husband, Alfred. They didn't file their lawsuit against her doctor, Dr. McDaniel, and the blood bank until 1992.
Okay, so 2 years after the diagnosis.
Yeah, from an outsider's perspective, it seems like they acted reasonably promptly once they understood the situation.
Absolutely. And that's precisely why this case resonates. The timeline seems straightforward from, a layperson's point of view. Injury discovered in 1990, lawsuit filed 2 years later. That aligns with the general understanding that you have a period after discovering harm to take legal action.
But this is where Florida's statute of repose throws a major wrench in the works. The trial court actually dismissed the claim, specifically against Dr. McDaniel, and it hinged entirely on the statute of repose for medical malpractice in Florida.
Right.
Now, for you listening, especially if you're navigating the intricacies of law school, it's vital to grasp the distinction between a statute of limitations and a statute of repose. Can you break down that crucial difference for us?
Certainly. A statute of limitations, as you mentioned, typically begins to run when the injured party discovers, or, well, through reasonable diligence, should have discovered their injury. In Florida, for medical malpractice at the time, that was generally a 2-year window from discovery. However, a statute of repose is fundamentally different. It sets an absolute fixed deadline calculated from the date of the alleged wrongful act.
The act itself.
Exactly, irrespective of when the injury is discovered. In Francine Damiano's case, Florida's statute of repose for medical malpractice was 4 years from the date of the alleged malpractice, that 1986 transfusion.
So even though Francine had no way of knowing she was infected until 1990, the 4-year clock on the statute of repose, which started in 1986 with the transfusion, well, it had already run out in 1990.
Precisely.
That means the 1992 lawsuit, in the eyes of the trial court, was simply filed too late because of this fixed deadline. The fact that the HIV wasn't discovered until after that 4-year period was, legally speaking, irrelevant under the statute of repose. It feels inherently unjust on the surface.
It does indeed. And that's the crux of why the matter was ultimately certified to the Florida Supreme Court. What that means, for those unfamiliar with the term, is that the lower court essentially asked the Supreme Court to rule on a specific legal question. In this instance, the central legal question was whether this particular application of the statute of repose was constitutional. Did it unconstitutionally bar a claim when the injury was, by its very nature, impossible to discover within that initial 4-year window?
And the Florida Supreme Court, relying on a precedent set by the 1992 case Cush v. Lloyd, actually upheld the constitutionality of the statute. That might seem counterintuitive given the circumstances. What was the core of their reasoning?
Well, the court's reasoning, articulated in Justice Grimes' majority opinion, centered on the legislature's intent. They underscored that the legislature had made a deliberate policy choice to protect healthcare providers from what they termed endless liability.
Endless liability.
The underlying rationale was to foster a degree of certainty and finality for medical professionals and institutions. The legislature recognized that this might unfortunately preclude some plaintiffs with injuries that manifest late.
Like Francine.
Exactly, like Francine. But they concluded that establishing a firm deadline served an overpowering public necessity.
overpowering public necessity. That's a powerful phrase. It really highlights the policy balancing act at play here. The legislature prioritized the protection of the healthcare system from potentially open-ended liability, even if it meant that individuals in incredibly unfortunate situations, like Francine Damiano, might be left without legal recourse.
Mm-hmm.
But what does that necessity ultimately cost individuals like Francine, and what does it signal about how our legal system prioritizes different interests?
That's a critical question. The court, in its decision, essentially deferred to the judgment of the legislature. They acknowledged the potential hardship for individuals like Francine Damiano, but maintained that it was the legislature's role to weigh these competing interests, the rights of potential plaintiffs, against the need for a stable and predictable healthcare environment.
So they saw it as a legislative call.
They determined that the 4-year statute of repose represented a reasonable, if perhaps not perfect, balance.
Now, it's important for us to understand that this wasn't a unanimous decision by the Florida Supreme Court. Our sources indicate that two justices, Kogan and Shaw, actually dissented.
That's right.
While the specifics of their dissenting opinion aren't exhaustively detailed in the case brief, based on the situation, what do you think the fundamental basis of their disagreement likely was?
Given the facts of the case, it's highly probable that their dissent focused on the access to courts provision of the Florida Constitution.
Okay.
This provision generally guarantees individuals the right to seek legal redress for injuries they have suffered. The dissenting justices likely argued that a statute that completely bars a claim before a person could reasonably know they were injured fundamentally infringes upon this constitutional right.
Because how can you access the court if you don't even know you have a claim yet?
Precisely. The core of their argument would likely be the inherent unfairness of extinguishing a legal cause of action before it has, in a practical sense, even come into existence for the injured party. So the court sided with this idea of overpowering public necessity. But as we mentioned, not everyone agreed.
So we see this fundamental disagreement within the court. You've got the majority prioritizing this idea of finality and protection for healthcare providers.
Mm-hmm.
And the dissent, very likely emphasizing the individual's constitutional right to seek justice, particularly when the injury is latent and couldn't have been discovered within that set time frame. It really shines a light on the different policy objectives that are often in tension within our legal system.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it speaks to the ongoing and often contentious debates surrounding tort reform. These discussions frequently involve trying to find the right balance between ensuring that individuals who have been harmed due to negligence can receive compensation, while also trying to control costs within the healthcare system and ensure that healthcare services remain available. The Damiano case serves as a stark and very human example of where these competing policy goals directly collide.
So for you listening, especially those of you who are law students grappling with these concepts, what are the crucial takeaways from the Damiano case and the general idea of statutes of repose?
The most critical thing to understand is the absolutely unforgiving nature of a statute of repose. Unlike a statute of limitations, which can sometimes be paused or doesn't begin to run until the injury is discovered.
The discovery rule.
Exactly, the discovery rule. A statute of repose creates a hard and fast absolute deadline. This means that even in the most tragic of circumstances, where an injury is genuinely latent and utterly undiscoverable within that set time frame, a lawsuit can be completely and permanently barred. In the context of medical malpractice, as we see so clearly in Damiano, this can have devastating and life-altering consequences for individuals and their families.
It's not just limited to something like HIV from a blood transfusion, is it? This concept of a statute of repose and its strict deadline could potentially impact a whole range of situations where harm doesn't immediately become apparent.
Exactly. Consider a scenario where a surgical instrument is unintentionally left inside a patient during an operation.
Oh, yeah. The classic example.
Right. If this isn't discovered for many years, depending on the specifics of the applicable statute of repose and the timing of the eventual discovery, a lawsuit against the negligent surgeon might be time-barred, even before the patient ever becomes aware of the problem.
Even if they find it 10 years later.
Potentially, yes. Similarly, think about certain medical conditions that develop slowly over time due to exposure to toxins or the gradual progression of a disease. These types of situations could also fall victim to a statute of repose if the diagnosis occurs after the fixed deadline has passed, regardless of when the negligent act actually took place.
So the key is the clock starts ticking from the act, not the discovery.
That's the crucial point. The clock starts ticking from the date of the alleged malpractice, not necessarily from the moment the injury becomes manifest or is discovered.
This really highlights why it is so incredibly important for anyone working in or studying the legal field, particularly those focused on medical malpractice, to always consider both the statute of limitations and the statute of repose.
Absolutely critical.
They are distinct legal concepts with dramatically different implications for a potential claim. Missing the repose deadline can be absolutely fatal to a case, no matter how strong the underlying merits might be or how recently the injury was actually discovered.
That's a crucial point. You might have a perfectly valid claim where the statute of limitations hasn't even started to run because the injury was just discovered.
Yeah.
But the statute of repose could have already expired years ago, effectively shutting the courthouse doors.
Mm.
It's a legal nuance that can have profound and irreversible consequences for clients seeking justice.
So to bring our deep dive into Damiano v. McDaniel to a close, we've really seen a stark an impactful illustration of the inherent tension between legal deadlines, specifically the statute of repose, and the fundamental pursuit of justice, especially in cases involving latent injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Francine Damiano's incredibly difficult experience underscores the often harsh reality of these fixed legal timelines, where the inability to discover an injury within a set period can completely eliminate an individual's right to seek legal recourse, regardless of the circumstances.
And it leaves us with a really significant question to consider. Reflecting on cases like this, where there's such a clear disconnect between when a negligent act occurs and when the resulting harm can actually be known, what truly represents the fairest way to balance the need for timely legal action with the very real possibility of injuries that may not manifest for years, even decades?
Yeah, where do you draw that line?
Should the legislature, which is often focused on broader policy considerations and systemic stability, or the courts, which might be seen as having a greater capacity to consider the specific equities of individual circumstances, have the primary role in determining where these lines are drawn?
That's the big question.
It's a deeply complex interplay between the goals of tort reform, the protection of fundamental constitutional rights like access to courts, and the overarching principles of justice that underpin our legal system. And the case of Damiano v. McDaniel serves as a powerful and poignant reminder of the very real human impact of these seemingly abstract legal frameworks.